from the Geddes Virgin and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg. I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, Geddes Virgin co-sports editors Elizabeth Hill-Frank and Claire Healy will sit down with women's basketball coach Nate Davis to discuss the team's successful 2018 campaign.
Then, I'll talk with Senior Associate Director of Admissions Daryl Jones about building more diversity at Gettysburg College. Stay with us.
So you had a pretty great season this past winter-spring, 26-3 overall, Centennial Conference Championship, make it to the Division III NCAAs. What was really working well for you this season? What meshed to bring this great success?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously we're really thankful we had a great year, and the players worked really hard to make that happen. And, you know, the difference between a year like this year and, you know, maybe a different year is really pretty minimal. A lot of times people think it's this huge difference. And, you know, sometimes it's just about making plays in the right time and having the ball bounce your way. And, you know, I think the players worked really hard and putting themselves into the situation to be successful. They've committed really hard to, you know, offseason, getting better. We had a great chemistry on our team this year, and that always helps. And not only players that you saw on a regular basis, but you know, the players that maybe you didn't see play a ton, but were just instrumental to our success. So 1 through 15 on the roster, everybody contributed and everybody did a great job. And you know, that's what it takes to really, things have to go your way, but then you also have to have a great team culture where everybody's working in the same direction. And I thought we had that this year, and it was exciting to be part of it and to play my role too as a coach in that. Mm-hmm.
And you have a relatively young team, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly going to miss the two seniors we had this year, Emily Gibbons and Kendra Meredith. I mean, they're phenomenal people and players. And so we're going to miss them, no doubt about that. And other people are going to have to step up, you know, going forward. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we definitely had players that were young and new to the program and that contributed greatly this year. And, you know, we're hoping for big things for them going forward, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we talk about this, that last year's success has nothing to do with this year's success. And so we have to keep that in mind going forward, that next year is going to be a new year and we start 0-0 and we're going to have to earn it all over again.
And so originally you were predicted to finish third in the conference. Mm-hmm. So going into the season, what did you focus on to get to that number one position?
Yeah. You know, preseason rankings are worth is about as much as the paper it's printed on, to be honest with you. And they're put online, so there really wasn't any even paper involved in that. So, you know, you take those with a grain of salt. And, you know, I think all of us in the room, in our locker room, knew what we had. And we felt good about what we had. And it was just about an opportunity for us to go out and prove that day in, day out. You know, in that preseason rankings, they were really close, too. I mean, we were picked in that position. But we also got some first place votes in there too. So some people in our conference thought we were good enough to win it. The unique thing about our conference this year was three of the four teams that were in the conference playoffs the year before all returned everybody, us being one of them. And so Muhlenberg, who won the conference last year, Haverford, who won the regular season last year, and then us all returned everybody. So I think what the preseason poll indicated was that there was three really good teams that were going to be battling for the championship, and it was going to be determined on the court, you know, and I think that's the way we took it. You know, at the same token, I think it was a nice challenge for our team too. Having lost in the conference championship game last year not necessarily be overlooked, but to be put in that position was a nice bulletin board material. And us coaches, we like that sometimes. They look at this is where they think we are. So I think that was a motivating factor in some ways. I mean, obviously that you can't hang your hat on that solely, but that definitely, you know, I think it was a good challenge for us.
Speaking of Haverford, you mm-hmm. guys had two really close, intense games against them in the regular season, and then you come to play them in the final. How did you, like, use what happened in the regular season in that final game?
Yeah, I mean, they're a great team and well-coached with some real senior leadership on their team as well and some good young players too. And, you know, I think when you get to the championship game, you're right, you played them twice before and they know you so well, but you also know them very well. And it really just comes down to players making plays I'd love to say that us as coaches did a great job or whatever, but at the end of the day, Ashley Guerin had to hit shots and Kendra Meredith had to get the steal towards the end of the game. And obviously Emily Gibbons and Emma Dorsham, all these players had to be their best version of themselves for us to be successful. So, I think that's when you play a team twice before, it really comes down to players making plays. The coaches have done, the players, they know what to expect. And, it's kind of going out and just executing now.
So now we've talked about sort of some of what happened this season. What are your prospects looking like for next season? Like, what are you guys looking for, like recruits or going forward?
Yeah. Obviously we want to maintain the level of success we've had. That's certainly our goal. The success we had this year has been our goal since day one that I arrived here 3 years ago. You don't always achieve that, right? We don't control that as much as we'd like to think we do. But I feel good about our future. I feel like, our culture is in a way is such that they hope and expect to be successful. So that's always the first victory is, hoping and expecting to be good. And I think that's certainly something that our players expect now. But now we got to go out and earn it. And the players coming in partly chose Gettysburg College because it's a great place and a great institution. But they also partly chose because Gettysburg, our women's basketball program, has had a level of success and they don't want to be part of that. So just how fast those players come in and acclimate themselves and play the way that we think they can play will have an impact on how successful we are as well and how the current players, how they get better and improve from this year to next will also impact how successful we are. So I think we're optimistic, but also realistic in knowing that there's no guarantees. A lot can happen between now and then, and certainly next year is, again, a new year. And we start 0-0, and nothing we did this year will matter next year. So we know that, and just keeping that in mind, I think, is going to be really important for our team.
And you mentioned that this was only your third year as the coach. How has your time at Gettysburg been overall? How have you liked it and meeting goals when you came in 3 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. This is a great place, not only for students, but, certainly for people who work here. And the culture on this campus is, and within our athletic department, is amazing. And I get to work with great people, and I get to work with talented students who demand the best and expect to be challenged, but also have the abilities. And it's been amazing. It's been a neat experience being here, and one that I'm very thankful that I have the opportunity to be here and work with the people I get to work with, not only as students, but also my coworkers in the athletic department. I'm surrounded by tremendous people. It's not something I take for granted by any means. It's something that I'm thankful for and appreciate the opportunity to do. Obviously, we have a lot more we want to accomplish. This year, we got to check some things off that we got to accomplish this year. As a program, but now it's about, okay, where can we take it from here and can we sustain this level of success going forward? I love that challenge. So I'm looking forward to taking on those challenges with the student athletes and the staff to see what we can accomplish next.
And making it to the NCAAs this year, how was that experience? I mean, obviously, didn't end the way you may have wanted it to, but just in general, bringing the team there.
Yeah, I mean, it only ends for one team the way they want it to end,
Yes.
And so, only one team's going to win a significant game at the end of their season. Everybody else is going to go home with a loss and have to think about what it was that caused that loss or whatever. I think for our team, it was a great step forward in the right direction. We have some great examples of teams within Gettysburg Athletics that have had success and go to the NCAA tournament on a pretty regular basis. And I think getting there is the first step. And I think for us this year, in the group of four teams that were in the NCAA tournament with us at Montclair State, we were probably one of the more inexperienced teams as far as the NCAA tournament. I mean, Montclair, the team that knocked us out, had been there six straight years and had hosted five of those 6 years. That means something. Those players weren't intimidated by the situation. I'm not saying we were necessarily, but I think that plays a factor. Just the familiarity, the comfort of being comfortable playing those games at that time of year. Albright, the team that we beat in the first round, had a group of seniors that had made it to the NCAA tournament, three out of their 4 years there too, and went deeper into the tournament. That's where we want to be. I think that's what we take and learn from this year is, one, that we can get there, and two, once we get there, what can we do with it? Until you're there, you can only, theoretically think about those things. But having had the real experience now, I think hopefully we'll grow from that experience and maybe get hungrier about it and maybe do a little better job the next time we're in there. So we'll see.
Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about or anything at all?
Well, no, obviously, I appreciate you guys, like I said in the email to you. Thankful that we have the opportunity to talk about our program, and I'm very appreciative and don't take it for granted that you feel it's necessary and important to talk about what we've done and what we've accomplished. The players worked really hard and they dedicated themselves in ways that other people don't. And they deserve all the credit and the recognition for the work they put in this year and have put in, for some of them, the 3 years that I've been here. That's the one thing that I really appreciate is just their effort, their work that they put in, and they're the ones who deserve the credit. They're the ones who, make the difference. I say this to them all the time. I just, run up and down the sideline, yell things out, and I don't shoot any shots. I don't do any rebounds. I don't stop anybody defensively. They're the ones who deserve the credit, and they're the ones who, I'm thankful for that I get the opportunity to work with. Yeah, that's the only thing I would say is that they, should get the credit for what they achieved this year. They did a great job.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, ladies. As I said, we don't take for granted the Gettysburgian covering us and doing this podcast. So we're excited that you're interested in our program and thankful for that.
And now here's the Sunderman Conservatory Wind Symphony for today's Sounds of Sunderman segment.
And now I believe we have Ben Ponce with our bullet report.
It's been quite an exciting couple of weeks in Gettysburg College action since On Target last left you before the spring break. On March 24th, the women's lacrosse team defeated Ursinus 20-3. The men's lacrosse team defeated Ursinus 8-7. And the men's track and field team finished second of three at the Dickinson Red Devils Little 3 meet. The women's track and field team also finished conveniently second of three. The women's tennis team lost to Swarthmore 9-0. The men's baseball team lost 5-4 to Penn State Harrisburg and then again 7-6 to Penn State Harrisburg. Harrisburg on March the 27th. On March the 28th, the men's lacrosse team defeated Franklin and Marshall 16-12. The women's lacrosse team defeated number 4 College of New Jersey 9-5. The baseball team defeated Penn State Berks 13-8. The Muhlenberg women's lacrosse team fell to our Mighty Bullets 14-5. The baseball team on March 31st lost to Muhlenberg 7-1 and then again 3-2. The men's tennis team lost to Ursinus 6-3. The women's track and field Ursinus Invitational saw the Gettysburg women finish 1st of 10 and the men finished 2nd of 10. The women's tennis team defeated Ursinus 8-1. The softball team defeated Washington College of Maryland 11-2 and again 5-1 on March the 31st. The men's lacrosse team defeated Muhlenberg 18-11. The men's golf team finished 8th of 15 at the Hershey Cup and 2nd of 9 at the Dickinson Invitational. The women's lacrosse team fell to Franklin and Marshall 8-4. The baseball team fell to Franklin and Marshall 4-0. The softball team defeated McDaniel 5-3 and then again 5-2. Thus endeth the Bullet Report.
Thanks so much for that, Ben. We'll be right back with Daryl Jones. Well, it's April, and that means it's decision time for millions of college applicants around the country. For most undergraduate institutions, the deposit deadline is May 1st, so students only have a few weeks left to decide where they'd like to attend college. This is also one of the busiest seasons for college admissions offices, as they work to maximize the percentage of students who accept their offers of acceptance, also known as yield. Joining us now to talk about his life, career, and the college application process is Daryl Jones, Senior Associate Director of Admissions at Gettysburg College. Daryl, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jamie. It's a pleasure.
So I want to get started in the beginning. So can you talk a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and what you did before you came here to work at Gettysburg?
Sure. So I grew up actually in Gettysburg and actually adjacent to Gettysburg College's campus. I went away to college, so I was a track and field athlete and a member of the Marching Blue Band at Penn State University, thinking I wanted to be a doctor. It was a little problem because surgeons see blood, and I'm not good with blood, so that took care of that one. Eventually, I decided to do something else. So after a brief stint on Wall Street, I came back home for what I thought was 2 years. And I've loved every one of the 33 years of that 2 years that I've been here.
Yeah, definitely. So you're also on the board of directors of the Pennsylvania Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. And I understand you're involved in the independent music scene. So could you talk a little bit about your work on the side in the music industry?
Sure. You've actually done some homework.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, the current name is the Academy for Media Production. Teaches film, recording, and lots of other things. I've always been a musician, and I'm actually part of a professional society called the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. So that's called ASCAP.
Right.
So when you're looking at actual labels to CDs or pieces of music, you might see ASCAP in parentheses. But I've always been a musician and have been fortunate to be with some people who allow me to do some music collaboration with them. I lead an 11-piece band called What Breaks Loose that is really fantastic. And the recording aspect is really about using musicians to record musicians and produce them without ripping them off the way some other people in the business do. So We're known for really attracting some great bands to record, but being fair to them and actually getting them to be good at what they record before actually recording, because studio time is money.
Do you have any CDs out? Do you just perform live with your band? How does that all work?
So this current band is a bunch of musicians from several different bands. Our members stretch from near Philadelphia to Baltimore, New Jersey, and some other places in Maryland. And we just have fun. What we do is we make arrangements that are difficult to copy for other people. Mm-hmm. We choose keys that are tough to emulate, and then we play. So as an example, one of the songs we do, believe it or not, is a funk version of Amazing Grace in F sharp major. Really tough to play. So yeah. We don't have CDs with that band. We are just about playing live.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, and do you do that regularly, or is that sort of an impromptu kind of thing?
Not impromptu because we have technically 11 members, and so
wrangling that's a lot of logistics there.
Yeah, multi-state band with 11 members is tough. So we do have, if I can do a plug, Jamie, May 12th and 13th, we are playing back-to-back shows, 10 p.m. at Gary Owen Irish Pub on the 12th, and on Mother's Day, we are playing at Battlefield Brew Works at about 1 p.m., so...
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting, and maybe the band will still love me after we play these two shows.
Well, they're two great venues. You'll probably have a lot of people there to see you, so...
We have a good following.
Yeah, so I also understand that you're a guest chef at the Blue Parrot in Gettysburg. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship?
Yes, so another name change. Now it's just called the Parrot because it's under new ownership.
It is.
But actually, there is a woman named Allison McElhenney Giles, and she was in the first class of women to graduate from CIA, mm-hmm. as in... the institute that teaches chefs how to do their thing. So you can imagine how talented she must be. But I can remember in the late 80s saying I wanted to learn how to cook like a restaurant chef. And she said, I'll teach you. And I started adding up the dollars and going, well, I wonder how much this is going to cost. But literally, for years and years, she taught me how to cook like a restaurant chef for free. So I do it I do it for free. I mean, I do get free meals out of it.
Right.
But it's such a blast.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know your love for Wye River. That's something that we've bonded over the years as a great dry rub. It's from the Eastern Shore of Maryland, so I know that you love your cooking. So absolutely.
Seafood, Jamie. Well, seafood.
Gotta do it. And so one last thing that I understand is one of your hobbies is martial arts.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So from a young age, I've had the pleasure to study a couple of different styles. One is Isshin Ryu, one is Tang Soo Do, which is sort of the father of the American Taekwondo, and then another is Hapkido, which is a little more lethal, but it's one that you have to stick with in order to do. Lately, I've been studying, so for the past 15 years, a style of Kung Fu called Choi Li Foot, which combines all the animal styles into one, and allows you to be true to each art form, but combine them in whichever way you wish. So I've studied martial arts for now 44 years.
So shifting to Gettysburg College itself. So you've worked in the admissions office, as you said, for almost, I guess it's 33 years now.
Yes.
Can you share what first drew you to Gettysburg College?
I will tell you what first drew me here is what keeps me here, and that's the kindness of people. The willingness to disagree in a civil manner, mm-hmm. the willingness to work out challenges without being hateful, which is a stark contrast to today's political society. But it is that people are okay with being a high quality, highly selective place, but being kind about it. And I think that plays out in two rankings that don't seem to fit together in the Princeton Review. We're in the top 20 of about 4,000 colleges for students who study the most. Hmm. We're also in the top 20 for students who like their professors the most. Those don't fit together, but that sort of captures why I love this place. It's tough, it's challenging, it's competitive, but it's kind. And people don't seem to have the typical... I am a 33-year administrator, so Jamie, we can't speak as friends.
Right.
You must kiss the ring.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that I've seen that here in terms of the willingness of people that, I mean, like even President Riggs. You talk to her, it's just like talking to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that community of door holders, I think, is really something unique.
Wonderful.
Here at Gettysburg. Speaking of that highly selective process, mm-hmm. Gettysburg College received 6,200 applications this year.
We did.
And only a small percentage of those students obviously are offered a spot mm-hmm. In the incoming class. So what process does an application to Gettysburg College go through? You receive the application. What happens from there?
So after it is complete and all of this is done electronically, people actually read the applications and we read every single word. And it's done at random. So in your electronic queue, if you're reading at home on a given day, you're going to try to read 45 to 50 applications and do what it takes to complete it. But you're giving it a preliminary evaluation that tells you its relative academic strength based on a rubric that I cannot reveal to anyone. And also the value of what the student does outside of the classroom. And that value is not just school-related activities. It could be scouting. It could be a job after school. It could be any other thing that makes the student a whole person. And then after the deadline, we actually meet in committee, which is pretty exciting. I mean, we spend 7 days per week together for a month and a half. And we read everything about every single individual. And although it's still painful to turn down such talent, the fact is what we end up with is this really well-blended student body that is balanced and rounded and still has all the great personal qualities that you and I both find admirable.
So how many people would read an application prior to it going through the committee process?
Usually just one, Jamie. So okay. It's one person reads the application and does an evaluation. A committee could be two people, it could be three people, it could be four. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what we do is based on something that is pretty modern in the admissions world, committee-based evaluation. But Gettysburg has really done it for a long time in looking at an application and having two people look at it at right. one time. You get the essence of the student.
Every application goes to committee, or do you weed out some of them in the initial process?
There are a few that get weeded out because they're just not quite as strong. But
right.
honestly, Jamie, the part that's interesting for us, and I'm going to make up a figure that's probably close to accurate, I'd say 90% of our applicant pool is pretty solid enough to be college ready at a really good academic place. So we have a great applicant pool, and this year was so strong, it was yeah. just, it was hard to turn down such great people.
Take us inside the room. As you're trying to make these tough decisions between two really great candidates, what is it that can make the difference? What can make or break an acceptance?
Well, one thing that doesn't is authenticity. So if you are looking at a student who's a great student, who has taken advantage of what their school has to offer in the way of challenging courses, has done well consistently or has recovered from a setback pretty well, has really been involved in what they've loved. So they're not just filling out a resume. Their activities are commitments. And you can see it by the number of hours per week, the number of weeks per year, and the number of years in high school they've done it. Mm-hmm. They've written a great essay. They've connected with us on a campus visit, an off-campus interview, an information session here. But they have that Gettysburg quality that says, I'm going to be able to hang academically, and I'm going to make a commitment that'll allow me to make a difference outside of the classroom. And I think the last part of that is that you just get this sense that that student will take advantage of the transformative opportunities that Gettysburg offers. You know, we need all of that, because without right. that, you have a great science center, a great center for global education, a great Garth Waite leadership center, a great radio station, and no people to run it. Like that plug there?
Yeah, I did. That was a excellent plug. So when you first sit down to read an application, what's mm-hmm. the first thing you go to? What is your go-to first thing to read? Do you just start at the beginning, or do you start in a specific spot?
I start at the beginning. I look at who they are and where they're from. I look at their family information so that I can see if there are any dynamics I need to be aware of mm-hmm. after that. I look at their activities next to see what their commitments are. I read their essay next to see how they express their thoughts. I look at their recommendations from teachers and counselors and other people after that to see what others think of them. And then when I'm reading, the last thing I read is the transcript. The SAT, the ACT, although we're test optional, so it may not be testing, but I want to have a framework for the human being so that I can say, here is who the human is that's attached to all these great grades.
What would you say, if you were to give one piece of advice of a way that applicants can stand out in the committee process, one thing that they should do in high school to be, you know, that perfect applicant for Gettysburg College, what would you say?
I would say to do what you love beyond the classroom and be your absolute best every single year. It's still about authenticity, though. Some folks try to game the system because of the selectivity, and it's really that we're looking for individuals who are comfortable being themselves and who are ready.
One of the things that you do in your role as a admissions officer is you conduct admissions interviews with prospective students. And I was one of your interviewees.
I loved it, Jamie.
Four years ago when I was applying to Gettysburg. You have this way of putting people at ease that I think really is a gift. In the interview, we talked about my goals. You said something to me that has stuck with me ever since. You said that although you would love for me to come to Gettysburg College, you wanted me to go to the school at which I felt I had the best fit. And you weren't overtly trying to sell me the institution like other admissions counselors had. You were really interested in me and what was the best choice for me. That's not to say that you didn't try to sell me on Gettysburg at all. You bribed me with servo cookies and milkshakes. But it didn't feel like a sales pitch.
Yeah.
You're the main reason I actually came to Gettysburg College.
Thank you.
Without you, I might have ended up at Dickinson or Franklin and Marshall. I know. So in a world where liberal arts colleges are so much alike, what role do you think the admissions interviews and personal connections with the recruitment counselors plays in the admissions process?
Jamie, that's a fantastic question. And what I tell people, at least for Gettysburg, is that we are good at saying, here is what you have expressed that you're interested in doing. Let me tell you what Gettysburg College does. So instead of it being to overly simplify it, hi, Gettysburg admissions officer, do you have a good biology program? Yes, student. Yes, we do. And then you move on. Instead, right. It is, we use names. We talk about individuals that we know are going to teach you. Mm-hmm. We talk about individuals, I mean, you know that some of my favorite people are in the dining center. So we talk about the people you're going to see. And we share student stories. And again, the idea is not to talk about Gettysburg just programmatically, because Gettysburg College's difference is in the people that we have. So mentioning those individuals allows us to say, Jamie, with confidence, I know Gettysburg is great for you, but I want you to understand if it's great for you. And if it is, this is going to be great. And if it isn't, again, choose the place that is best for you. So for me, our job is to be information exchange agents. I just made that up. But we're exchanging information with you as students and also connecting you to the rest of the campus.
How can applicants use an interview to really stand out in the admissions process?
People can tell us their real story. If you're a babysitter, and you don't have much in the way of flashy-looking activities, tell us why you are that person who's so trusted by so many parents. Tell us why it is that younger children connect with you. That is a great quality that you get to tell us about. Or if it's that you want to tell us how interested you are in us. We believe you if you're being authentic, so that's easy. Or if you want some information that is not available on a catalog, even though we do those electronically here, or in a website, the real action of Gettysburg College, you can ask us because we see it every day. And our vested interest is we admitted you. Now we want to see what you're doing. And we keep track of what you're doing, as you know, because we're visible and we love seeing what happens with that set of documents that belongs to a real person when you're here and thriving.
Shifting a little bit to recruiting a more diverse class.
Mm-hmm.
You've been committed for years to increasing the diversity of the student body at Gettysburg College.
And absolutely.
How do you go about building and recruiting a diverse incoming class?
So part of what we do is we first look for talent and we go by the assumption that is legitimate that race or class or being someone whose parents didn't go to college, regardless of ethnicity, doesn't control your talent. What has been a commonality is that you can find talent in every corner, but you have to go find it. I think the thing that makes us different is that, to be blunt, if I totally could, you know, absolutely, I'm going to anyway.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to stop you.
Well, yeah, exactly, Jamie. So in a lot of places, if it's just about ethnic diversity, then you hire the person who represents that ethnicity to do that work. That's the case at many other places. I call it apartheid recruiting. At Gettysburg, any one of us will spend time in an inner city with talented youngsters who belong to a community-based organization. We'll find pockets of people who are on scholarship at a boarding school in New England or in the Midwest. We find the talent, and because Gettysburg College is a place that is trusted to make that talent develop on the collegiate level, it just happens to work. Is it a challenge? Absolutely, because everybody wants the same students. But we know where to find talent based on our relationship building, and then we go after it.
Talking about going after it, I know you have a home in Chicago in addition to here at Gettysburg. Can you talk a little bit about the work you do for the college in Chicago?
Sure. So I do a combination of things. I'll visit the typical suburban, high-powered public and private schools because those are great places with great resources. But I'll also spend time in the many schools that are part of, as an example, the Noble Street Charter Network, which is a network that is very well financed so that these inner city kids are given access to the same advanced placement or international baccalaureate courses as their suburban counterparts. They are given the opportunity to spend time on campuses that are financed by some pretty well-placed friends of the network. But these are students who need to understand what the terms are that you and I might throw around all the time, the alphabet soup that we use in this profession. My advantage is that I just go and explain it, and I'm very real with them. And then I say, here is what makes a quality match for you. Here's what makes a quality transition. So through that work and through the good graces of Gail Sweezy, my director, Barbara Fritz, my vice president, I've been able to turn Illinois from an outlying state to one in which, by numbers of applications, is now competing favorably with two big feeder states, and that is Connecticut and Maryland. So we are just a few applications behind those states, but it's because I'm given the time to cultivate relationships, be helpful, do off-campus interviews out there, take Gettysburg College to the students, and then help to articulate what Gettysburg College could mean for them.
So obviously you've seen success in the things that you're trying to do, but have you encountered any major roadblocks or speed bumps along the way?
Here are some major roadblocks. One is distance, because people don't look at the idea of a 90-minute flight on Southwest Airlines as being what it is. They say, oh my gosh, that's 700 miles, how do we handle that? Or it might be that with some, because of responsibilities at home, they're less likely to go to college more than an hour away from where they live. Or in the case of a couple of institutions out there in Missouri and in Wisconsin, students are offered in-state tuition without having to live in those particular states. Sticker shock is a big one. Without even looking at financial aid, people will say, forget it, you cost too much. And that's before I even get to talk about how great our financial aid process is.
Right. So this is actually the next topic. So it's a great segue.
Jamie, we're still connected.
Look at
man.
That, connected. The comprehensive fee, it's also the sticker price for the college, is another way of thinking about it, including tuition fees, room and board, has increased to $67,490 for next year.
It has.
So as the comprehensive fee continues to increase year after year, how can the college continue to recruit and enroll students from diverse socioeconomic backgrounds that may not be able to afford a Gettysburg education and may not be aware of financial aid?
Here is a plug to all of you listening out there. We have one of the most enthusiastic alumni bases out there, and I'm speaking as a Penn State grad. You know, those people are rabid, but Gettysburg College folks are dedicated to this place. So by having a big financial aid budget that helps to defray that cost, would we like it to be bigger? Absolutely. But we can say to someone who needs every single penny of that cost, apply. Apply correctly, apply on time, and if you're admitted, we can make Gettysburg College affordable for you.
66% of students at Gettysburg College do receive some form of merit or need-based aid.
Yeah.
So many students don't pay full price. Mm-hmm. But with a fee that high, as we said, people might get the impression that Gettysburg College is only for people of means, and they may not choose to apply. So I know you talked about the message you need to get out. So how are you working to get that message out that there's aid available and that they should apply?
I borrow people from other institutions. So I have some very good professional associates at similar schools and some that are not at similar schools who will co-present with me to charter school networks, to groups of guidance counselors who serve the students who attend them, to community-based organizations that serve talented students. And we say, look, these places that have higher price tags also have larger financial aid budgets, and we are the places that are making college affordable. So even though maybe 3% of the United States graduates have a liberal arts college degree, we tell people of, again, the transformative opportunities that exist here, and the fact that they have a price tag, and you don't have to pay that price if you don't have it in your pocket. It's a very different concept because if they're buying a house, they're buying a car, they're doing something else, you're borrowing everything and paying everything back and then some. It's a weird concept to get such a valuable commodity and actually not have to borrow the majority of it.
Yeah, definitely. I received significant grant aid here, and it's such a blessing to not have so much debt to have to repay, especially since I'm moving on to law school now.
Does that mean you already found out?
It means that I do have one acceptance, and it's a very large scholarship. So
congratulations! I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you very much.
My own nephew or something.
Well, thank you, Daryl. So getting back to recruiting a more diverse class. Yes. Obviously, the political landscape right now is, I'm sure, having an effect. Do you think that the Trump administration has had a negative effect on the number of minority applicants that want to apply to Gettysburg College? Or?
It hasn't to us, but it's because no political office, because those change every 4 or 8 years, is going to affect the history of a place that is doing a lot to get it right. So it hasn't affected us, but it's because Gettysburg College's consistency is still in the kindness of the people. And this is regardless of political stripe. People are still kind and respectful for the most part here. So our numbers keep looking great, and we hope they continue to look great on May 1st.
Where do you feel that the college stands in terms of representation within our student body of traditionally underrepresented minorities?
I say we have a long way to go. Here is a fact. In the nation, the kindergarten through 12th grade public population, I guess I'll call it, is now less than half Caucasian. So if you assume that those same students are going to become collegians, and then later lawyers, doctors, business people, teachers, clients of stockbrokers, it's incumbent upon every college, not just Gettysburg College, to get it right and enhance that representation. Three industries that did it well, and I'm going to give a plug for a TED Talk that I gave here on campus a number of years ago, McDonald's, Apple Computing, and Nike were among the first companies to understand that everybody might want fast food. And I'm not judging about whether or not people eat it. everybody wears footwear.
Right.
And everybody wants, at that time it was new, but the iPod, the iPad, the MacBook Air, and this is not product placement, but when those places started to reach out to the world of cultures, they dominated their sectors. They'll never be toppled. So it's not that Gettysburg is looking to make a financial windfall, but if we're going to be real about it, we need to get closer to what exists in the nation.
What new strategies do you think Gettysburg College should use in the years to come to recruit a more diverse student body?
We should use students and alums who are from more traditional backgrounds, and whatever that means. I mean, I don't call it predominantly Caucasian. I just call it historically. That's what all of these places were. Mm-hmm. But when those individuals realize the importance of having a place that represents the world, that's when we make the change. So it is costly because financial aid continues to be an important priority. It is something that means that we're going to continue to have to outpace the competition. So as an example, we are just cementing a new partnership with a place called the Academy Group in Chicago that is financed by the CEO of Guggenheim Investments and Irvin Magic Johnson and some other people. So Gettysburg College will be their first partner. That's going to get our names onto the lips of a lot of people in some pretty high-powered places, but it's about finding new ways to outpace the competition. We've had partnerships with places like Philadelphia Futures, for which we were the first partner, the College Bound Initiative run by the Tisch family in New York, for which we were the first partner. So we just need to keep being first and reminding people that we were the ones who cared the most first in a place that is going to be safe psychologically and kind. Is it perfect? No. But would I put my nephew or niece on this campus? Absolutely.
Shifting back to sort of your more personal side of things, what's your favorite part of the job here at Gettysburg College?
It is when I am on campus and I'm just crossing campus on, let's say, around lunch or around 4 or 5 o'clock, and not to be cheesy, but running into people like you and other students that I've met through this process when they were high schoolers, it is, I think, a rare feeling to love every minute of what you do every day. So I feel lucky. It's a blessing. But to see the results, so when you became the person who was doing the whole attic thing as a sophomore, is that right?
As a first year.
As a first year. See, I even forgot. But that is why I do what I do, because I actually get to see, I mean, it's not potential actualized, it's potential exceeded. There's no better feeling in the world than to know you had a part in somebody's success. Would not trade it for any amount of money or anything in the world. Absolutely love that.
What's the one thing that you're most proud of from your tenure here at Gettysburg College?
It is probably just being a first partner in the couple of organizations that I mentioned, because Gettysburg College changed the landscape when it came to partnering with community-based organizations. It's also working collaboratively with our Office of Multicultural Engagement, now what was Intercultural Advancement, in a new way that had both sides working on recruitment and retention. But for me, it's still seeing what students do and knowing that if I interviewed someone and they chose to come, I am over the moon every time somebody says, "You're the reason." I just say there is no higher compliment, because it makes me know that being kind, being a listener, being thoughtful, and being truthful and ethical is all worthwhile in an industry that it's tough out there and it's competitive. But being an ethical place, again, I sleep well at night because I know that everything I've done with every family has been on the up and up. Again, not anything I would ever trade.
Looking forward, what's one thing you hope to achieve in the next few years? One major thing, goal that you have?
I want for this place to continue to be the leader in how to think about how to diversify, and not by doing it through recruitment, but by doing it through graduation. So I want Gettysburg College's four-year graduation rate to rise above 90%. And I know there are lots of cogs in that whole system to make that work. I want it to be that we continue to be a place that, believe it or not, when you look at our underrepresented population, so whether they are first-generation students, students of color, that sort of thing, those graduation rates are always comparable to and usually exceed our overall four-year graduation rate. I want us to still be that place that leads. I want us to still be the place that says it's okay to be caring and also tough academically. I mean, it's a lot of us being more and more comfortable with our identity and having our alums continue to have the pride they have, which is what gives us a strong applicant pool, which is what gives us choice, which allows us to have the people we love to have here on campus. That sounded cheesy, but that's what I feel.
Well, Daryl Jones, Senior Associate Director of Admissions at Gettysburg, thank you so much for joining us.
Jamie, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Nate Davis and Daryl Jones for being our featured guests today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian, particularly co-sports editors Elizabeth Hill Frank and Claire Healy, and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, of the class of 2019, who is a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.